down to the left side. We will survive in this country wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Journalist, specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven's fire from his lips. Burn the same driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." We as a people will turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom. Thereby getting an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. which is the homepage, and catch the live stream at that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. We're also streaming at bbitumi.com/timeforanawakening. That's bbitumi.com/timeforanawakening. Catch the live stream there. Or you can download the TuneIn Radio app to any of your devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in the TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon. And you can stream the program live, even into your car, if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for an Awakening media is also there, full of the latest podcasts, the various programs on Time for an Awakening Media, interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also, check out that Time for an Awakening Marketplace and our partnership with the BB Toomey. Always interesting things placed in the marketplace all the time. Various African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 8:08 on this April 8th, Friday evening. And we're in Freestyle Friday mode here on the Time for an Awakening radio program. And you can always join the conversation on Freestyle Friday by joining us by dialing 215-490-9832. Anything that's on your mind, you can give us a call, talk about it. And we'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m., for podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:13 here in the city of Philadelphia on this Friday evening, Freestyle Friday. Before we get started with our program, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide, at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and R Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine. The temperature is moving up, even though we're having the rain. That means I got to go out in the yard and cut the weeds. And I know some of y'all might not have to do that, and you think that those in the city don't have to do that, but some of us still have, those ghetto trees and vines growing in our yards, and we have to prune them to make sure that they don't grow too high, get too wild.
We say ghetto trees. Oh, man. Boy, you got a lot of stuff with you, Richard.
Yeah, it's work, and you know, but I'll leave that alone. But yeah, everything's good. What about you?
Everything's good. We're in Freestyle Friday, so I guess anything is on the table.
Yeah. I've been in a book discussion reading Du Bois' biography by David Blight, who's out over at Yale, and we just finished it up. And not Du Bois, excuse me, Frederick Douglass.
Okay.
That was interesting. I wouldn't, for those who like to, you know, I think it is, it's informative, but if you can get it from the library, it's, you know, we can go one day, I'll go into my criticism, but it does give a historical overview of Douglass. And it made me think about something, you know, in this reparations repair moment. It's a couple of things, you know, that I'd seen. But it was one thing that specifically that, you know, Douglass' view of what it is, what he's seen as a vision of Black America's vision of America. That if we have time, I'd like to explore. And also, they had created a hearing looking at, from the financial committee, looking at the banks and insurance institutions that were able to benefit from the enslavement of African people. So I thought it was interesting me finishing up, the book that dealt with that period. And then they having this hearing, and if we get time, I'd like to play, at least, because we had, Sister Palmer, who, you know, did the research, and trying to, get reparations and actually sue those, insurance companies and other things. And it was just, you know, interesting that they're now having a hearing. They have Dr. Darity at a, Dr. Barry and others to testify of how this country actually made, you know, a financial upbreak off of enslaved bodies. But the part that got me, you know, that Douglass and that struck me was in his book, it says not a Negro problem, not a race problem, but a national problem where American people will ultimately administer equal justice to all the varieties of human race in this republic. I'm not sure that based off of that this was what Douglass was saying. So I'll stop there, Ellie, but that's what's on my mind as we engage in Freestyle Friday.
Now this was conducted this week.
Yeah. The person I want to play is a 4-minute clip.
Go ahead. You know, yeah.
You play it now. You know what? I don't know. Oh, that's right. I don't think it can be heard because I didn't put it on the what you call. Oh, I apologize. I tried to put it on there and I didn't take. Let me see.
Were valuable financial investments.
Yeah.
So valuable that financial institutions, municipalities, universities, private citizens and medical schools bought, sold, gifted, deeded, traded, mortgaged, leased, and transferred enslaved people as a form of legal tender. Human chattel were foundational to the Western economies from the 15th through the 19th centuries. They were one of the most unique forms of commodity and assets because they were human beings. Defined as chattel, a movable form of property, we have records confirming their value at every stage of their lives, from preconception to postmortem. We also have documents that clearly outline the connections between enslaved people and specific financial institutions, such as insurance companies and banks. Those records can be traced from slavery to the present. Such legacies reverberate throughout our society today and are reflected in all kinds of disparities. The wealth gap is so wide that most of us will not see it narrow in any appreciable way in our lifetimes. Turning to insurance companies, the Southern Mutual Life Insurance Company, founded in 1848 under the name of Georgia/Southern Mutual, shows evidence of profits generated from insuring the bodies and lives of the enslaved. During the second year of offering policies to enslavers, the company saw growth from 28 to 239 policies. It reported that most of those who purchased policies were modest enslavers who had, quote, a small number of slaves who they were dependent upon, unquote. Thus, they secured their income by taking policies on the lives of human property. Looking at policies from 1856 to 1863, we learn that the company insured enslaved people from age 1 to age 60. Some policies were for 1 month or two. Other policies were for as long as 5 years. Regardless of the length, each enslaved person underwent a medical examination to determine their value, and the company set premiums and rates based on their value. Although this company originated in Georgia, Southern Mutual Life Insurance Company had agents throughout the South and is still present today. In addition to individual policies, some states, including Maryland, passed legislation that encouraged people to purchase policies on the enslaved. Here, the state supported policies that helped enslavers search for self-liberated or runaway enslaved people in order to recover the cost of those who absconded and had been away for, quote, a reasonable period of time, unquote. The enslavers could make money off of those who escaped. The fact that enslavers could make money off of those who escaped is remarkable. They also made money off of what we call elderly at that time. 40-year-old Ehrlich was valued at $2,000 for 1 year with a premium of $80 and a percentage rate of 4% on his policy. What do these numbers reflect in terms of contemporary times? 51-year-old Charlotte was valued at $800 in 1860, which was equivalent to nearly $23,500 in 2014, and I would argue much higher today. Insurance policies alone help explain why some enslavers kept elderly enslaved people. Many would not command the insured value in the market. However, they could be replaced with someone younger at death. The banking industry literally facilitated transactions related to enslaved people by extending loans, securing debts, gifts, and deeds of trust. And banks, including Citizens Bank and Union Bank, kept track of collateral payments, issued notes, and that involved the enslaved, whose names can be found throughout the records.
Well, I guess Darian and him spoke later.
Yeah.
Who was that was putting forth that information?
I didn't get a first name, Dr. Barrett.
Okay.
And it's just the thing of the value. I mean, the economic benefit off of black bodies and the economic situations that we're in. And, you know, for me to read that point from Douglas, the saying that, you know, and this was a contention between Douglas considering being the old guard and the new guard, because, you know, it was people like Du Bois and them that were saying that we were dealing with a Negro problem. Basically, that we were dealing with, we had to deal with this problem because we see how America is operating. And at that point, the South is regaining control over the South after Civil War. So, you know, the lynching is going on. The South is, states' rights is being in the South is being, controlling, getting control back, control over those, the lands that they lost during the Civil War. Mob violence, terrorism is going on in relationship to black folks who now had the right to vote because of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment. So to say it's not our problem, and then we're here in this moment of talking about repair and reparations, it's just to hear the financial aspect of this. And it's other things that I just seen, would add. One statistic I've seen that the income distribution of black households between 2010 and 2012, from least of 12,500, there was 21% of black people living below 12,500, 37% living between 12,500 and 37,000. So And when you look at those
and what
numbers.
And what is it, when was that, Richard?
2010, 2012.
Okay, that 37% of black folks.
Between 12,500 and 37,499. And as we always say in Philadelphia, we're talking about a population of 400,000, right? That is living, below the poverty level. If this is not a continuation of the economic, benefit that this society has placed us in, that we have to address, and they're coming up with their solutions. As I finish this and I'm really looking over, Douglas' life, where it was considered, the success of black folks of that moment is that they were to end the chattel slavery moment, right? Because the next moment that would come up would be the civil rights moment, right? And to me, where we are right now is in the repair or reparations moment. And we have to keep that this how they make money off of our lives, and we have to be very conscientious of the programs they create, as they're talking about dealing with that now race doesn't matter, right? In that sense. I don't know if I'm making sense, Elliot, but I thought that was interesting to see, looking at the past and hearing them addressing in the present. And you heard her say that banking institution, insurance institution, is still around today.
Mm-hmm. I heard you mention, I think First Union Bank or something like that, a couple of those banks First Union changed its name. I think they changed the name to Wachovia. Or came under the Wachovia, not Wachovia, Wells Fargo. They changed it to Wachovia and then Wells Fargo. So they've been flipping names, but I recognize some of the names that you had mentioned in that, what the sister was saying when she was addressing that body of people.
And the point that they would ensure, recognizing that, you create an insurance policy, and then you're not worried about having an older person because you know they're going to die, but you're going to make more money off of them dead. You made money off of them when they were young, and then you're going to make money off of them when they die to be able to purchase someone else. And does this practice end just then? That's the until we get control over our black bodies, over our economic, our human capital in this society, until we get control of that, then someone else is. And the number speaks to their favor, whoever that they are in these institutions that makes these decisions and come up with these programs, like United Way and a Dr. Nakia Owens, who was at United Way, and as an example, and putting a program together in order to deal with, getting money from Pew Trust so that they can put together a program to provide people with, whether it be, her work ranges from teaching at the collegiate level to research and statistics. This is this Dr. Nakia Owens. But the program, she currently oversees financial empowerment portfolio at United Way. From the vantage point, she invests funding in workforce training, opportunities for impoverished communities to obtain employment and capital resources, build assets, and be empowered to grow. Now, so here it sounds like that, when you talk about cash payment, and coming up with reparations program, United Way has already got a person, she's black, and already got who was used to be homeless or in the foster care system, who has now a PhD in running this. And guess where she's at? Guess where she's implementing another program? Right here in Philadelphia. The Philly to pilot a guaranteed income experiment, giving cash to some needy residents, right? As of March, Philadelphia will start giving up to 60 people $500 a month for at least 12 months. Recipients will be selected from a pool of 1,100 people who have received federal support through TANEF, Temporary Assistance in Needy. And this is going to replace the public service, public assistance program. The key distinction from traditional social programs such as TANEF, says Dr. Nakia Owens, Philadelphia Deputy Executive Director of Family Support and Basic Needs, is they don't have to do anything extra for this money. And people are running around talking about reparations should be passing out a check. Well, United Way has already figured out how to do that. Right? Now, where does this money go for training? For they got savings program, entrepreneurs program. Who is going to get this money that they're giving? Are there black companies that's going to be receiving from these federal dollars that's already in place to do this training? I just don't see it.
No.
So how does this cycle work in order to deal with, and here in Philadelphia, it says, and I know in other urban and suburban and southern and northern cities, the Pew Charitable Trust reported that almost 400,000 Philadelphians who make up 26% of the city population live below the poverty line.
Mm-hmm. 400,000.
400,000.
Now, live below the poverty line. But how many of them are working poor?
Right.
Because what you described earlier, from the 12,000 to the 35,000 or whatever,
right,
that could be a family of four.
Right.
Or five. That would be considered working poor. Because if you miss a check, then you'll be right down there where it states, the poverty level, below poverty level.
And you see, I started from, and it's important, that we become, we talk about it all the time, of dealing with the Reconstruction period. I think even more than the Civil Rights period. And I say even more because black folks were creating towns. You know, remember when we were reading, when Sherman asked, what do you want? Land and be left alone. But what would they rather have it as? Dependent, yes, and this is a characterization of mine, dependent beggars, as the elder said, hobos moving from one place to the other. No stability from one generation to the next. We call it gentrification now.
And you, Richard, and see this all... All of these conversations keep going back to the same problem, which is the lack of leadership,
right,
or conscious leadership, something that we can develop. It's not anything that's not within our grasp, but sometimes a percentage of our people depend on these leaders that have been indoctrinated into this system, and it's not going to work because they haven't made a dent in some of those things that you're speaking of. In fact, they've been getting worse generation after generation.
And it shows when you talk about leadership, in New York, they had a brother who organized to be able to put in place a union,
in New York from under.
Yeah, I've seen that at Amazon. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what got me is how they characterized him, right? You know, because they said he was a know nothing. What they call him, a ragtag grassroots movement. They call it, you know, that he organized. This Derek Palmer, a young black man, you know, and be able to bring this into being. It's just something, you know. When we talk about where do we see leadership at? Do we see leadership as you're raising? Do we see leadership where they say we should be seeing leadership, or are we overlooking leadership, leadership potential, leadership qualities? Because we're looking who is in front of the television, who is getting these grants. I might be off in saying that, but that's when you raise about leadership and where we have to look and cultivate, where the cultivation of leadership has to come from. It isn't the people that come out of the Urban League, the NAACP, the United Way. And in some instances, those who are coming out of the Democratic Party or the Republican Party that are black, that's supposed to be speaking and looking out for the best interests of the people that they supposed to be elected by.
You know, it's 8:37 here on the Friday edition of Time for Awakening. We're in Freestyle Friday, but so anybody that got anything they want to talk about or any topic, you don't have to sit and listen to me and Richard. Yes. You can give us a call, 215-490-9832. Richard, I got a few articles I want to throw out, and plus I want to read this letter that was sent by a organizing group, and it's in reference to Reverend Pinckney up there in Benton Harbor and some of his activities that he's been doing. I'll share that shortly. Richard, you know, when you talked about Darity and a couple other professors addressing this congressional body, I assume, this week about the banks and financial institutions and unbanks and all that made money off our ancestors, the bodies of our ancestors. So when you're talking about justice, reciprocity, people being treated right, things being made right, you have to first start with righting a wrong, righting an atrocity if you can. I mean, you can't do that, really. But you can try to make amends by doing the things that will help to repair people that you damaged. Now, I'll draw you a scenario or an example. You see that America had went after, what's his name, Maduro, Richard?
Right.
A couple of years ago, Trump, and in the beginning with Biden, his administration, and you could see that they were actively trying to get rid of him. And I'll put that term out there. I think everybody understands what I'm talking about. First, they tried to sabotage the different cities. Oil was coming out of people's water. The water's contaminated. You remember all the things that was happening? Cities was falling into blackouts. They had already produced a puppet guy that was going to take over for him when they eliminated the present leader. And one of the last straws was when they sent Marines in there, if you remember, and they was captured on that beach. You remember that, Richard?
Yeah.
And they mentioned that, you know, they mentioned two people had been captured, two mercenaries, and then you didn't hear anymore. Well, after this stuff from Ukraine broke out, Biden met or sent Bilkin, not Bilkin, you know, who's that guy from the, always forget these people's names.
Yeah, I don't have
it. It might be Anthony Bilkin. He met with Maduro. Now, he didn't meet with the puppet guy that they were setting up because he don't control anything. They was saying that he was the leader of Venezuela, but that seemed that didn't materialize. Good because point. The people still supported Maduro. So he met with Maduro a couple of weeks ago, or maybe a week and a half ago, to make some type of deal. Because if you remember, doing all of this stuff, they had sanctions against Venezuelan oil. You remember that, Richard? Well, they was making some type of deal to kind of, you know, make amends for what was done because of this Russian situation, and they didn't want them dealing with Russia. So we'll open the doors back up so you can deal with us. That was the thrust of the meeting. But one of the first things that America wanted, you know what they wanted?
Oil, wasn't it?
No. Well, yeah, sure, they wanted oil. But I'm saying one of the first things that they wanted to do to, I guess, kind of pave the way for negotiations, they wanted, now it mentioned they wanted two Americans released. Now, it didn't mention who the two Americans was. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, maybe Tom Wigney or others can find out, but two Americans were supposed to have been. Now, can you imagine who they might have been?
Mm-hmm. Two of those Marines.
Yeah, exactly. Now, it didn't mention the people's names, but it mentioned that they wanted some Americans released before they start any type of talks. So this type of stuff that's going on, you know, our people got to stop falling. Some of our people got to stop falling for this okey-doke and propaganda about, oh, this people is a monster. They doing atrocities. Look at what this man's hand is full of blood. Almost what the I played that clip when Minister Varakhan was putting Mike Wallace in his place and what he said to him. You remember that clip I played last week, Richard?
Right.
So,
right.
You know, and what I'm saying is before America wanted to talk about anything, they wanted those people released. So you got the same situation basically here. You got Europeans that always want to curry favor that they're black folks' friends, and they got some black folks that strive to be assimilated as poster boys for that. But if you're being honest, before you talk about anything about trying to repair relationship, repair what you've done, you got to first release political prisoners and make some type of reparations. That's where it starts for any government. Negotiating with another people, that's where it starts. All you got to do is look around the world. Any type of conflict that nations have been having or nations have had, one of the first things they do in the beginning is a prisoner exchange. Right, Richard?
Yeah.
A prisoner exchange. I want so-and-so released. Then they release other people if they got people in custody. But, you know, but see, what helps it is when you have these assimilated blacks or blacks that strive to be assimilated, however you want to word it, that are poster boys for representing the government. You'll never see those things on the table. Or it'll be parameters in which Europeans want to discuss them in.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you never hear any elected officials that black talk about the release of political prisoners. Maybe I've missed it. Maybe you can point it out, Richard.
I've never heard it.
But when you're dealing with governments, that's what they do. That's one of the first things they do is release somebody's people that's been held captive.
Mm.
So all I'm saying is this man, he don't change his spots. He's disingenuous, he's not sincere, and these type of talks and what he's doing. Here's another example of the insincerity. If you remember, Richard, when Breonna Taylor was murdered by cops, the issue of, and, you know, and it came around the same time as Floyd and the brother down there in the Atlanta area.
Yeah, I can't think of him.
And the discussion around the procedures that these people were using to kill basically innocent people.
Right.
Two of the people was totally innocent, and Floyd didn't do anything, but they claim that he passed a $20 bill that was counterfeit. I mean, people come across counterfeit currency all the time. That doesn't warrant a man being killed, murdered right on the public street. So
in Georgia?
Yeah, Mount Arbery. I'm sorry. Arbery. You had Arbery and Breonna Taylor was murdered, no-knock warrant.
Mm-hmm.
So all the discussion came up around no-knock warrants, the elimination of that, especially when black folks were screaming about this type of stuff. And then you had the perfect storm because, you know, people as a whole had been locked up in their homes. So as soon as white folks got a chance to get out and take your mask off and run around the street, they was out there hollering, George Floyd, George Floyd. Mm-hmm. But you don't hear them hollering now, but they was hollering then because it was a perfect storm. People had been locked up in their houses for almost a year, so they couldn't wait to get out. And when they got out there, they was turning over cars, busting windows, starting fires. They was doing everything. Mm-hmm. But the discussion of the no-knock warrants was out there, and state governments were supposed to talk about the reversal of the use of no-knock warrants. You remember that, Richard?
Right.
Now, let me share this article here because it's always examples of the disingenuous nature of the people that we've been held, were previously held captive under. It's always examples of it. As soon as you turn your head, you can see another example. Let me share this article and again, they'll have someone that looks like you presenting their position. Let me read this because it was in the published report a couple of days ago. No charges filed in the no-knock warrant killing of Amir Locke. Minnesota prosecutors declined to file charges Wednesday against Minneapolis police SWAT team officers who fatally shot Amir Locke while executing a early morning no-knock search warrant in his downtown apartment in February. Locke, 22, was black, was staying on the couch, sleeping on the couch in the apartment when the authorities entered on February 2nd without knocking as a part of an investigation. Locke, who was not armed, Locke, who was not named in the warrant, was shot seconds after the authorities entered the apartment. Attorney General Keith Ellison, whose office reviewed the case, said prosecutors determined Officer Mark Hanneman was justified in firing his weapon. After a thorough review, this is Ellison, after a thorough review of all the available evidence, however, there was insufficient admissible evidence to file criminal charges in this case. The state would be unable to disprove beyond a reasonable doubt any of the elements of Minnesota's use of deadly force statute that authorized the use of force by Officer Hanneman. Nor would the state be able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt a criminal charge against any of the officers involved in the decision-making that led to the death of Amir Locke. Ellison and Hennepin County Attorney Michael Freeman said in a joint statement, Amir Locke's death came as three more Minneapolis officers were on trial. Let me skip down a little bit. Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey announced in an immediate moratorium on such warrants in March. He announced a new policy that requires an officer to knock and wait before entering a residence. Some lawmakers have been pushing for a statewide ban on no-knock warrants, except in rare circumstances, in their application for search warrants in the Minneapolis apartment and other locations. Authorities said a no-knock warrant was necessary to protect public and officers as they looked for drugs, guns, clothing worn by people suspected in violent killings. Authorities asked the officers be allowed to conduct search without knocking and outside the hours of 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. because the suspects being sought in certain instances for violent crimes. Locke was killed seconds after SWAT team members entered the apartment where his family said he was staying. Body cameras video shows an officer using a key to unlock the door and enter, followed by at least four officers in uniforms with protective vests. As they entered, they repeatedly shouted, "Police, search warrant." They also shouted, "Get on the ground." The video shows an officer kicking a sectional sofa and Locke was sleeping on. Three shots were heard, and then the video ends. Locke's parents said that it appeared to them that their son was startled awake, and his mother, Karen Wells, called his death an execution. So we see, Richard, here that if you remember when after the George Floyd killing, it was supposed to be a moratorium on no-knock warrants.
Right.
But then all of a sudden, these police got a no-knock warrant. In fact, I think the same judge that convicted that other cop of killing Floyd issued the no-knock warrant. So now the mayor in March signs another bill putting a moratorium on no-knock warrants. I mean, this is almost like a three-card molly. You know, the guys used to play on the bus and subway and all that type of stuff. The sleight of hands. What is this game that they're playing? And our people are the ones that are suffering behind it because young people are being murdered. Now, how you enter somebody's house early in the morning and kick the sofa where a person is sleeping, then when he jumps up, it comes some shots. But according to Ellison, it's no, you know, we don't have enough evidence to prosecute him or even to charge him. Let him be found guilty or innocent in court. They don't even charge these people. Now, let me check this out, because this is what's happening nationally presently. In the United States, a no-knock warrant is a warrant issued by a judge that allows law enforcement officers to enter property without immediate prior notification to any residents. And no notification such as knocking or ringing your doorbell. In most cases, law enforcement will identify themselves just before they forcefully enter your property. It is issued under the belief that evidence that they hope to find may not be destroyed between the time that they enter and the time that they secure the area. Currently, Florida, Oregon, Tennessee, and Virginia ban no-knock warrants. However, state-level bans also do not affect federal law enforcement. 13 states have laws explicitly permitting no-knock warrants, and the remaining states issue them based on a judge's discretion. So to be honest, Richard, if you're looking at this, 46 states still have no-knock warrants, and four states don't. But to be honest, if you look behind the writing, 50 states still have no-knock warrants, because in the four states that don't, it says, however, the state bans do not affect federal law enforcement. So, I mean, what is that saying? If you got local police that want to enter a property, maybe you get a sheriff, a federal sheriff or whatever, and then you can go into the, it's ways to get around it.
Right.
So it's clear from this that no-knock warrants is not banned in this country. So they'll still be doing the same thing that they've been doing before. Nothing has changed the way these police is dealing with black folks. The defund the police stuff was a sham. A mantra put out there, black folks wasn't talking about that. They was talking about they didn't want these people doing what they're doing, terrorizing black folks. So none of that has changed. No-knock warrants haven't changed. They're not defunding the police. In fact, they're getting the police more money. So what has changed in regards to that? Nothing. And then black Democrats got their marching orders when we played that clip when Biden was scolding all of them, telling them to shut up about saying, you know, about getting on the police. And then we see a Supreme Court justice that just went in that, you know, some of our people was cheering like they was like it was the best thing that ever happened this year. And she's got the support, unconditional support of sheriffs around the country and the FOPs around the country.
Mm. And Noble.
And who? I'm sorry.
Well, the black police officers.
Oh, well, okay. Yeah, and she'll be taking that oath of the office, I guess, as soon as this other guy steps down, this Breyer. And, you know, let me read this here. I solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion. And that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of this office on which I am about to enter. So help me God. That's the oath of office that they all take. That they're going to support and defend this Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. So when they say that domestic, that included a lot of our ancestors.
Elliot, I was just pondering that as you were reading that, and because I get it, you know, and you know that I started with the Douglass quote that it's not the Negro problem, and I'm wondering at what point, I mean, is it just an attitude on my part that America always seen black folks as a domestic enemy?
Exactly.
At what point did it not see? I mean. Am I going off? I mean, is it just me being anti? Or does history show that out? And does our condition show? I mean, I hear people who say they love America. But as that in that clip said, black folks will be at zero wealth. How could we be here this long and be at zero wealth? And we're the oldest non-immigrant community in this country.
That can only be possible, Richard, if you live in a racist society. But some of your leaders, Harris on one side of the aisle and Scott on the other side, along with Booker and several others, said that this country is not racist. Mm. So who are they speaking for? Who are they speaking in behalf of? They don't want to violate their oath. I just read their oath. I will defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same. That's what their allegiance is. It's not to you. You might look like them. It's not to you. If it comes between you and or you, your speech or what you're talking about in reference to this country, the policies of this country, how they deal with black people here, they're not in your they ain't in favor of what you're talking about. They might say it. It might be politically expedient for them to voice certain things. Other than that, they ain't going, They're not on that same road with you. They're not. That's the reality of it.
And it makes me, it makes, and maybe I only think in, you know, because we live in a society that the white media propagandizes and controls the way the information content, because they'll tell us, not too long ago, even when the vice president was the senator, was dealing with the question of black identity extremists.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But they've never said that black identity extremists is infused at various levels of law enforcement. But they've said white identity groups, white groups are known by the federal government
to be involved in law enforcement. Exactly.
And it's silent now, it seems to me. And as you say, always say, I don't get to the press. I don't have, the press in front of me all the time. But you would think January 6th and whether they consider them domestic terrorists is still up for question. But as you said, as you started, there's black men and women in prison who only action was because this society has been consistently been unjust, and in most cases did not go in any kind of all-out warfare with them. But they tell us that these not only are they buying guns, these white identity groups, white terrorists, American, domestic, that not only are they buying guns, they selling them. They got bunkers. They organize. They kill people. And wow. You don't see them locked up like that. You don't see them paraded in the press. No, I don't see. I'm not in every state and be able to run down who's doing what. And but you don't see them paraded in the press. If they that intrinsic to that oath that you just read, in the sense of who is the domestic terrorist? But black folks is treated like domestic terrorists.
And wait a minute, Richard. That oath I read about siding with enemies, both foreign and domestic, you got white politicians that openly cavort, support, financial support, take pictures with white nationalists. Evidently, they're not considered enemies of this country. Because that's a violation of their oath of office, isn't it?
Right.
According to the oath of office, it's a violation.
But we've seen this thing play out before, Elliot. And that's why, it's critical for the Time for Awakening audience to utilize this platform on Freestyle Friday, to advocate for more information, to become more informed. Because wasn't the Reconstruction period, didn't they go to war with these guys? And didn't give it back to him. Am I missing something?
No.
They gave it back to him and allowed them to terrorize. Then and now, because I as I was going through this book, I said, wait a minute. Now we don't hear about it, and if it's going on, we ain't hear about it. Hearing about it like Ida B. Wells was talking about lynching. But how the hell do you just sign in Congress an anti-lynching law 130 years later?
Oh, my goodness.
Am I missing something?
And some of our people were saying that was some type of victory.
An anti-lynching law 130, like is it going on like that? Now, I know, you know, Clarence Thomas, you know, he was talking about high-tech lynching at one point, but...
Wow.
Does that make... You, I mean, it's, you know, what are we watching here?
Yeah, well, we're watching the show, Richard. The show. The show. Not what's going on behind the scenes, but right. The show.
Right. Right. I mean, it's and it's important for us, you know, as you just laid out in dealing with just the whole thing of the no-knock law, to be able to line these dots up to ask the question, because what you raise, well, as you say, well, at one point it was state power didn't want federal power to be to override them. Local power don't want state power to override them. But they'll get out, they'll create these laws like, well, you can, we stopped the no-knock law, but it's okay for the federal. That sound like the, was that the, which one was that? The 13th Amendment? You're a citizen unless, no, is that the 13th or the 14th Amendment? You're a citizen unless you create a crime.
That's 13th.
You create a crime, then you're still a slave. And how many black folks are under lockdown now that we talk about? We let them characterize, this is the prison industrial complex. We let them tell us they can identify at third grade. How the hell can you identify at third grade that a person is going to go to prison? And if they go to prison, that means they're a slave. That's just like the market. That's just like, you know, what she said, well, you, in order to get the insurance policy, we got to check out the health of your property to see if we will give you the policy. And insurance is dealing with actuary. Maybe I'm reading too much in it.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, you can give us a call, 215-490-9832. We're in Freestyle Friday. Richard, before I go to Freestyle Friday, let me read, because I read about the states mm-hmm. that still have the no-knock, or that don't have it, do have it, and they'll have it if a judge signs an order. But let me read this part, because that goes to the so-called constitutional right. It says, amid nationwide protests in response to the killings of Breonna Taylor and George Floyd, there was extensive calls to end no-knock warrants. No-knock warrants also conflict with the right to self-defense. Stand Your Ground laws and Castle Doctrine, which explicitly permit the use of deadly force against intruders that enter your property. So, if this young man, and he had a licensed gun, I don't know what his job entailed, but he was a licensed gun owner. Mm-hmm. So somebody kicked your door in at 3 o'clock in the morning and kicked the couch where you're sleeping, and then you jump up and grab a weapon, and they riddle you full of bullets. And according to Keith Ellison, along with this other guy, the black guy and a white guy signs this order, he issues a statement saying it's no grounds to prosecute. I just want people to think about that, because I'm quite sure when Ellison took that job, that black folks was waving banners and cheering and saying he was the first, just like they were cheering and waving banners a couple of days ago. Just like they was cheering and waving banners in 2008. and on and on and on. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. You can get involved by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. Abibitumi.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. Abibitumi.store is here for you. ABIBITUMI, Black Power, ABIBITUMI, the only word you need to know to join your global Commits You Black family, to join your interconnected Commits You Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
That this problem needs to be solved, and we can't keep relegating it to generation after generation because a few of us got a little money, a few of us got positions, a few of us have wealth, while the masses of our people are going steadily down. No one man can rise above the condition of his people. The brother said responsibility. Is it that we should let them take responsibility to do for us, or should we pool the knowledge that's at the table, the power that's in our community, the wealth that's in our community to change the harsh reality of black life in America? We have to do the job of fulfilling the black agenda. Thank you.
We have a message to the black man. Because the black man today is a man who has been made now almost into a laughing stock. Nobody takes the black man serious. We are just used to be somebody's tool. We are the sportsmen. We're the singers and the dancers. And we're also labeled as the pimps and the criminals and the drug dealers and the killers and the vagabonds of society. We're the bogeymen of British society and other Western systems. And we want to dispel that lie and destroy those myths and put the black man back on the map where we belong. Who is the black man? The black man is the original man. If it wasn't for the black man, no other men could be on this planet. We are the fathers of humanity. We gave birth to all of you.
We are the watchmen on the wall. You are too. You watch with a political eye. We watch from a spiritual eye. But we're supposed to be the watchmen for the people that vote for us. The sad thing is the people vote, but they don't give you the money to run your campaigns. So here come big business.
How are you? How are you, Judge? How are you, Alderman? How are you, Congressman? How are you? How are you, Reverend? Well, what can I do for you today, Reverend?
You can't do nothing for me. See, that's what we got to be careful of. We got to be careful of who we bow down to. But see, when you get in your congregation and you talk this Jesus, this powerful Jesus that's sitting at the right hand of the Father with all power in his hand, then you go with your hat in your hand to the governor, to the mayor, to the president, begging for some crumbs. You have sold your God cheap. And you make the white man downtown disrespect all of us.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back. Time for an Awakening. It's 9:18 here on Freestyle Friday, and you can join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Excuse me, that's 215-490-9832. Richard?
Hey, Ellie, before you go to the phones, did you see this article about the Peace Corps?
No.
It's in Atlantic Black Star, as was other, but in Atlantic, it says it does not justify it. Peace Corps guidance for black volunteers in Ukraine causes a stir after being exposed on Twitter. Some corners of the social media are in an uproar over the U.S. Peace Corps guidance on handling racism in Ukraine. Peace Corps positions in Ukraine are currently not open, but Black Peace Corps volunteers who applied were warned to be prepared to be called the N-word and face other racist behavior while in Ukraine. According to guidance on the Peace Corps website that is currently being discussed on social media, the warning, which includes personal accounts from volunteers, calls for having thick skin and an understanding that racial discrimination comes from Ukrainians' lack of exposure to black people.
Oh, shit. Excuse me. Come on. Richard, listen. We talked about this before on the program. We talked about this. Now, that clown Meeks And I'll say it. You know, what the hell? Maybe I'm wrong. I shouldn't say that. Meeks, the head of the Congressional Foreign Relations Committee, black guy from New York, went over there. And I told you, when the Amsterdam News questioned him about what was going on with black students, the stupid answer that he gave, oh, we talked to Ukrainian officials, and they were saying that they don't condone any racism. You know, remember that dumb response that I told you that he said?
Yeah.
And if you remember when Kamala Harris and Lloyd Austin were saying, we stand with Ukraine, and I mentioned on here, if Kamala Harris and Lloyd Austin take them uniform, especially Lloyd Austin, take that uniform off and start running down the street of Kyiv, he'll find out how much he stands in lockstep. They'd be right after his ass. Now, all of a sudden, I didn't read that. I didn't see that. I'm glad that you shared that thing. They got to warn Black Peace Corps volunteers that when you go over there, you're going to be barraged with all types of racial epithets.
Let me go over with this here. It ain't funny because that I know, and for the Time for Waking audience, I'm not Philadelphia Center. It's just that, you know, I'm just limited. But I would assume wherever they're going. Now, this is what they're saying. This is the mindset. It is not uncommon for Ukrainians to refer to African Americans as N-words. Volunteers of color may be called a monkey, or may see children games with blackface, one volunteer wrote. Being aware of the history of dehumanization for people of African descent may help inform where this comes from. It does not justify it. It will be your discretion to determine the intent. Now it's on you again.
Oh, my goodness.
It'll
be up to you to determine the intent. If somebody call you a nigger or monkey or whatever, it'll be up to you to determine their intent.
The warning builds on the recent reports of discrimination against African students in Ukraine choosing to study in the country for cheaper living and more accessible education. U.S. Peace Corps volunteers have been in the country since 1992, teaching English and helping Ukrainians would find. Now, if they've been there, which means that ain't been a lot of blacks going to Ukraine, if they've been there since 1992, but they bring in hundreds of thousands into these cities. And they're saying, if that's where they have this mindset, where they live, what, just because they come across the borders, because they're being rescued, that changes?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, right. Wow.
And this ain't no new walk in the park when we talk about immigrants, especially European immigrants, over the historical moments of time coming into spaces where now called African Americans live and how they view and operate. When they say mob violence.
Wow.
I mean, I'm like, when I seen that, I said, whoa. But do you hear that?
No, you don't hear it. I'm glad they landed. What was it, today's thing?
The 5th.
The 5th of April.
April.
Good. Right. I'll make sure I pull that up because, you know, in my place of business, people come in there, oh, we need to support the Ukraine. I'll let them read this while they're sitting there. The April the 5th. Oh, good. Okay.
I was like, you know, so I just thought that was, and based off of what we're saying, because we have to be very, I mean, this is why it's so necessary when we're talking about why we need to have our own, understand we need to have our own political formations. We need to have our own leadership that comes out of that formation. We need to formulate our own policies because we keep getting duped in this America First and this whole thing of looking at the famous first. The famous first now Supreme Court black female justice. The famous first general. The famous first vice president, the famous first president. It just goes on and on and on about these famous firsts. Like, that changes the tenor.
Wow. Yeah, that's a good article there to kind of give our people because you're not going to hear this from their representatives. They're not going to tell you any of this. They're going to tell you to support the Ukraine, support what's going on there. It's showing kids crying. I don't want to see nobody getting taken advantage of. I don't care what they look like. But don't show me all these kids crying and all, and then your people being called. I read to you with the organization over there, and I'm going to try to get them for maybe this Sunday or next Sunday, try to get them to come on and talk about what's going on when they was going over there to try to free some of the ones that they won't let into England. They got them on the borders in France and other places, making them sleep outside. They can't check in the hotels. They can't get on the trains. They can't get on the buses. You remember what I read, Richard?
Yeah.
And then when they go to try to feed them because they're outside, they put a law in place that you can't give them no food.
And we have to understand what we're bringing forth is not against anything. It's a worldview that we need to have for our own health and well-being. If we don't have that worldview, then we'll be just like white folks. We're shocked. How could this happen? How could they, not only did they go into, if I'm not mistaken, they not only with the note, they went into the wrong, how many times they go into the wrong house?
Wow.
This is no joke. And are we dramatizing? I don't know, because it seemed to come up. We don't create the incidents. I'll leave it alone.
Let me take a couple of these calls. Let's go to 917. 917. Are you there? Let me put them back on. Hello? Hello? Let me put them back on hold. You, Richard, Maurice out of New York sent me a video. It was on Roland Martin. And it kind of talks about what we talked about around the meal lock. And I just saw it because he texted to me early, but I just opened his text when we took a break. I want to play this video because it deals directly with what we're talking about. This stuff haven't stopped. Now, this is a 70-year-old black woman. She was having a mental episode. Listen to the interaction with the police that went there. Now, it was, according to this video, it looked like three or four cops that kicked the door in. A 70-year-old woman. Now, a 70-year-old woman, come on. It's four cops that got a manhandler and look like they punched her in the face or something because her nose looked like it's. But I'll play it. I'll play it. Play it for the listening audience, and then we'll go to the phones. There's people waiting. Let me see if I can pull this up.
The Tulsa Police Department under scrutiny after releasing a video showing police officers taunting a black woman in distress. I want to warn you, the video you're about to see is very disturbing. We will show you what happened to 70-year-old LaDonna Paris, who locked herself in a bathroom while possibly having a mental health crisis. All right, folks, watch this.
Go ahead. 0551.
This is going to be so fun.
White male, 40s, dark blue or dark blue.
Now, Richard, now I'm going to keep on playing it, but the cops is banging on his door, and it's a woman and two guys. The white cop woman is laughing, saying, oh, this is going to be fun.
I was wondering who said that would say
that. That was one of the cops. Mm-hmm. And then the man comes and puts his foot, kicks the door, and then I'm going to keep on playing it.
Ruthless, I need you, Ruthless. What are you doing there to me? Cast, I need to get my son cast. I need my son to stop. Ruthless, I need you here now. Stop it. LH, stop it. Stop it. You're hurting me. Okay, I'll go to jail. I don't mind. I don't mind. Stop it.
Give us your arm. Give us your arm now.
boy is my shepherd, my boy. He is my shepherd. He leads us as the way we do it. Oh, you store my soul. Show my goodness and mercy. Follow me all day. Get your hands on my pants. That is so nasty.
Yeah, this was unnecessary.
You're right.
Joining me now, the attorney for Ms. Parrish, DeMario Solomon Simmons from Tulsa, Oklahoma, two of her children, Kendra Jackson in Texas, Chris Williams in Arkansas. First and foremost, sorry, you, of course, had to see that video there, Kendra and Chris. Was this a mental breakdown? What was this? What actually happened here?
Thank you for having us on, Roland. I don't know if that was to me.
No, that was actually to Kendra or Chris. Chris?
That's fine.
Yep. So mom had had been having hallucinations early that morning. I want to say about 3 a.m. She was texting the family. She was seeing things. And we had been trying to get in touch with her for several hours. Eventually, we were able to locate her. She was at school. She was at seminary, where they were very concerned about her behavior and had called me. And I had called my brother, Chris, to come to the school because I was out of town. And that's kind of where it started. And then the paramedics were called out to her school because they recognized that she was having an episode, and they did not want to put her behind a wheel. So that's how it started.
Chris, was this the first time she's ever done this?
It's not the first time that she's done this. It's not the first time that this has happened. But, you know, as if you have someone close to you that's dealing with mental illness, you know, it's a sliding scale. So she lives on her own and she's productive. But this is something that she has been diagnosed with later in life. And I was actually headed to Tulsa from Little Rock to try to help and try to intervene whenever all of this was happening. And I didn't get there in time. And by the time I got there, I drove around and looked for her in Tulsa and couldn't find her. And I just happened to log on to the Tulsa County website to see if they took her to jail, if there was a misunderstanding, because I knew she was scared. So I didn't know what might have transpired. And so I just happened to log on and saw that they had taken her to jail. And that's where it started.
DeMario, this is a perfect example when people have talked about defund the police, of shifting resources away from police officers going to the scene of mental health issues, mental breakdowns, and having professionals. But the beginning of the video was what also was disturbing, that these cops were essentially taunting her, laughing at her.
Yeah, Roland, I mean, they were tasing, saying, hey, you're going to get tased. I don't know if it showed on the video, but the officer, Wani, who we're calling to be immediately fired, she was saying, I love my job. This is going to be so much fun. And she says over and over and over that Ms. Parrish was 85. And 85 in Tulsa police speak means she's mental. She's having a mental health episode. They're also on video saying, we know she's having a mental health episode, and we have the CR team, the CERT team, critical response team, but we called them, but they're busy. They can't come here. So they knew for a fact that she was having this mental health breakdown, and they treated her like less than an animal. They treated her worse than they would treat a dog. And they not only did they do this to her, did they cause her physical injuries, but they put 7 bogus charges on her. They charged her with assault and battery on police officer. They charged her with resisting arrest. They charged her with animal cruelty. They charged her with attempted arson. Completely bogus. took her to jail. They took her to the Tulsa County Jail. They didn't give her any help. They knew she was having a mental health breakdown. They took her to jail and Roland, and for everyone that's listening, need to understand, she spent 30 days in jail, 2 weeks in solitary confinement, as they kept saying they were going to let her out because they knew she was needed mental help. They never let her out of jail. 30 days in jail, 2 weeks in solitary confinement over some bogus trumped-up charges. This is what the Tulsa Police Department does to black people on a daily basis here in Oklahoma. They started with the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre, and they have continued to this very day. And as you stated, Roland, this is a perfect example of why we need less funding for police and more funding for better services for people, but we need more accountability for people like this officer that violate the constitutional rights and the basic dignity and human rights and respect of people like LaDonna Paris, a great-grandmother, a seminary student, an author, a very accomplished woman treated like that on camera. It's an outrage.
I'm going to put it whole there. Richard.
Hey.
I mean, if you... if you see what they, I mean, come on, you drag, they beat this abuser's woman, 70 years old. You heard what the lawyer said.
I mean, hold her for a whole month, 2 weeks in solitary confinement.
Now, they already said that they knew that she had was having an episode, according right. to the lawyer. So you take somebody and put them in solitary for 30 days? What the hell? Come on, man. See, this stuff ain't stopping, black folks. This stuff is not stopping. These white allies that's supposed to have been had when Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery and Floyd was murdered, when those three was murdered, and all these white, supposedly white allies was out there hollering, George Floyd, and people was all getting all googly-eyed, some black folks. Ooh, we got white allies. Ooh, where they at? This stuff ain't stopped, and it's not going to stop unless we stop it, because your representatives ain't interested in stopping it, because their master Biden told them to keep the police out of your mouth. Let's go to a couple of these calls. Let's go to 469.
Hey, how you all doing?
Great, sir.
Yeah, Kevin. I'm in Tulsa, and I never heard about this until now.
Oh, wait a minute. You see, Richard, this is what I'm talking about. Listening audience, this is what I'm talking about the need for conscious black media to get messages out to our people. This is what I'm talking about.
And, you know, I'm not one who normally I get tripped of those things, you know, because I'm out there. And I never heard about this. It's shocking, man. And you do know that Tulsa has a black police chief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was her? Oh, well, you said you didn't even know about it. So I guess you didn't even hear her response.
Him.
Oh, okay.
I don't know, but I've got to talk to some folk and find out. Oh, man, this is just amazing. It really is. Hey, what is the name of the guy? You all have a spokesperson who talks about not anyone who advocates for integration is a fool. Who is the person who?
Oh, that's you all. Amos Wilson.
Oh, is that Amos Wilson?
Mm-hmm.
It didn't sound like him. No, I don't think that's Amos. I think that's another one. No, I recognize Amos' voice.
No, that's him. Well.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, that's amazing, man. But, again, I'm going to say a couple of things and then we'll get off. We're not going to get anywhere until we understand, until we begin to realize, not live in a fantasy world. You know, again, I think I put it out before. You've got Clarence, who's married to Becky.
Mm-hmm.
This lady is married to Bob. Kamala is married to Bob. most black families are not like that. Mm-hmm. So what are you going to do? When a case come up, you can't be 100% black because you're either married to Becky or Bob. So you're handcuffed. And then I always ask the question, why do you have so many of these people who, you know, these interracial marriages? And I'm saying because black men have been systematically destroyed, there's not enough black men with the intellect or the manhood for these black women who go off to college and you know, get postgraduate degrees and so forth. So you have an imbalance intellectually. And from the women that I know of and I've met, and most women want a man who's either on their level or above their level. And so if you can't find that, then who are you going to go to? Bob. So the problem is that because of the black men being under attack, you know, and as you all stated, within by the third grade, they have determined. I don't know how you can determine by the third grade if a person is going to be gone to become a productive citizen, or they're going to be set up for the pipeline. And I think they tell us that so that we can have the mindset that we repeat those things and what they say. And so when something happens, then we, a lot of time, will convict our own people. So, you know, that's where I am. But I'm going to check into this Tulsa thing because I'm just shocked that I never heard anything about it until now.
Yeah, I didn't. You'll be able to go on YouTube and pull up the whole footage. I didn't play that whole footage and the interview with her son and daughter.
Yeah.
But you'll be able to go in there and kind of see it.
I'm sure I know some of the people. Well, DeMario, the lawyer, I know about him.
Okay.
Because they actually still have a suit from the Tulsa massacre, and he's the lead attorney on that. DeMario Solomon Simmons, that's his name. He's the lawyer. He's the lead lawyer.
Okay.
So I know about him, but I'm just out taking. Now, I'll say this, and then I'll get off the air. Now, if it was someone, a black person who picked up some bubble gum in a store, and you know they would put them on front and center, you know. But this one, some kind of way, it got relegated to the back burner, and we never saw it. Amazing. We better wake up as a people and stop celebrating this Easter that's coming up that changes every year, which most people don't realize it's a pagan holiday. They don't even realize why it changes from month, from year to year. That's where we are as a people, lack of knowledge. Thank you all so much.
Thanks for your contribution, sir. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to 215. 215.
Good evening, Brother Elliot. How you doing, my brother?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Hi, Brother Richard.
What's up, man?
Praise be to Allah. Good show as usual. Brother Elliot, before I talk about everything, Elliot, Brother Elliot, you don't have to be diplomatic, Elliot. Gary, think she called that Negro a clown is the nicest thing you can say about that Negro. I thought him a son, he was an imbecile. So you ain't got to be so bad calling him a clown, Brother Elliot, because he's worse than a clown. He's a disgrace, man. But sit there talk so damn stupid like that about some old the government. We talked to the government. They said they're not going to deal with racism. Like, come on,
wait a minute. If that's the case, and now Meeks is the head of the Congressional Committee on Foreign Relations.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the case, then why did Richard read that article that was printed mm-hmm. in the National Black that they already gave warning to black Peace Corps workers mm-hmm. that when you go there, you're going to be greeted with all these racial epithets. How were they able to get this the Peace Corps is a government agency, I think, sponsored by the government.
Hey, Ms. Greenfield is a former Peace Corps person?
Yeah.
Miss, I stand with the...
And wait a minute. She should know this. She should know this. Mm-hmm. She was a former Peace Corps. I don't know whether you can consider them volunteers, because she ended up being official in the Peace Corps. So if this is a thing that's been stated to all of them to prepare themselves for this, how is Meeks going over there talking about he don't know, he asked them about race, and they said, oh, we don't condone any, and then he just let it go.
I know.
I mean, these representatives are worthless.
Ellie, this stuff is so ludicrous. If you ask a white supremacist, a so-called white supremacist, I've heard somebody ask a Klan member on TV, are they racist? They tell you no. I said, yeah, okay. All right, fine. All right, let me go watch the Phillies game. Man, he's not a racist. Let me go get my beer and watch the Phillies game. I mean, it's just so it's so asinine on its face, man. It's almost laughable. It wasn't so serious, it'd be laughable, man. I'm telling you. And Ms. Greenfield, she's so busy on TV being a stooge, you know, demonizing Putin like he's the only devil that's ever been in America, in the world, and stuff. You know, and ignore these devils over here in America for all the stuff that they have done, still doing, and going to be doing in the future if they not stop, you know. But she's so busy demonizing Putin like he's the worst thing that ever came about. I mean, I get so sick of these Negroes, boy. They did enough to make you sick, man. I'm telling you. And, you know, the brother that just called prior to me from Oklahoma, he said he didn't know about it. Well, to my dear brother from Oklahoma that's still listening, keep in mind, my brother, I saw you, because don't forget, in Chicago, you had many black folk didn't know about Laquan McDonald. Remember, Elliot?
Yeah.
They didn't know that brother was shot by that white devil cop so many times. And that old racist Zionist Jew mayor, Ron Emanuel, he hid it from the black community for so long. And all them black apologists, including Sharpton, all of them, they covered for that no good bum. You know what I mean? And he had the nerve. See, to show you, how the disrespect that these people have for us. He had the nerve. And I'm not making no case one way or another for Jesse Smollett, you know, the brother, the gay brother from the Empire show that just got let out of jail. I mean, I'm not making it, but I'm just going to show you what they think about people. Now, he sat up there and purposely hid from the black community and the public at large what this devil cop Van Dyke did to our brother in Chicago. But he going to make a big stink about Jesse Smollett lying about whether he got jumped by these so-called white, you know, racist. I'm saying to myself, give me a break, man. I mean, you know, he made a big, it's a gross injustice, this and that. But it wasn't no gross injustice when you hear it from the black community when them devil cops shot our brother with Laquan McDonald 16 times. And by the way, to people that don't remember Ron Emanuel, that's one of Obama's boys, you know what I mean, for chief, former chief of staff, if I remember correctly, you know? I mean, these devils, boy, I'm telling you, they sickening, man. And these niggas, they sit right up there, and they get these devils like Ron Emanuel cover. They get them covered, and they know these people hate black people, have no respect for black people, got nothing but disdain for black people, man. And they cover for them. And I, like you was telling Brother Richard just now, and you and Richard was conversing. I mean, again, if it wasn't so tragic, it'd be laughable. Oh, you gotta kind of figure their intent. So they call you the nigger. You got to know what the intent is. Well, like,
okay.
I already know what the intent. They intend to call me nigger because they just did. So if I'm walking down the street and a white boy ride by his cousin and say, hey, nigger, which has happened to me before, by the way. So what I'm going to sit there and say, well, Ellen Richard, I think he, I don't know what his intent was. He called me anywhere, but what was his intent? But ain't question knowing what his intent is. He called me a nigger. That's what he intended to do. So I got to think about it. I know what it is, you know? I mean, just stalk so damn stupid, some of these Negroes, man. Come on, man, with this foolishness, man. The intent.
And if you stand around and try to figure out their intent, you might lose your life.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you. You know, again, now, it's just the madness for these Negroes, man. Oh, man, that's why the Honorable Elijah Harmon said 50-something years ago, you got to understand the nature of this white man. If you don't understand his nature and stuff, you'll be always on the short end of his of the stick, so to speak. And this man has a mindset like no other. And like I've said many times, even on terrestrial radio and stuff, you cannot never discount that white woman and stuff, because she's just as bad as her male counterpart. And you would think that a by her being a female, she would be a little more gentle because she's, you know, she's a childbearer. But yes, but time and time again, and since our brother down in Oklahoma, Terrence Pritchard, you know what happened to him with when that white female cop shot him and the brother up in New York, I mean up in the brother just got recently shot in Minnesota, brother Dante in Minnesota, and of course down in Dallas with a white female cop went to the brother's house and shot. So they are just as wicked and demonic as their male counterparts and stuff. That's why I always say, you don't ever take your eyes off that white woman, because remember, she gave birth to that white devil. She birthed him in this world. So ever take I made her, and I think too many times, Elliot, in the black community, we focus so much entirely on that white man, which we damn sure should. Don't get me wrong, but never discount that white woman, because she's just as devious and even demonic as her male counterpart is. If you don't think she is, you're fooling yourself. You set yourself up for disaster. Trust me. You know what I mean? But like I said, it's just so much going on, man. And I'll say a couple more things and get off. You know, when I look at, again, these black electives or so-called black electives, so I look at a person like Stacey Abrams. I mentioned to you earlier, Elliot. Now, here's a woman who had showed total disdain. Remember, Elliot, for black farmers, remember?
Yeah.
But since she lost that election, to her friend, this is her words, not mine, she lost it to her friend, the racist governor, Brian Kemp of Georgia, the current governor, her so-called friend. And she said she was shocked that her friend, who she thought was a friend, even had political differences, she was shocked that her friend ran such a dirty, racist campaign against her. Her so-called, it's amazing how these Negroes, they so-called friends with these white bigots and stuff like that. And the same Brian Kemp who Donald Trump just recently called a coward. I mean, this shows you the mentality of these people, man. But anyway, Miss Abrams now, who's being put upon as one of these so-called, like the Obamas of the world. She's looking at the future superstar in black political arena and stuff. She just became recently a millionaire. Here's a woman who hasn't been making a lot of money. So, you know, when she lost the governor's race, I think she had to give up her seat down in whatever position she had. But yes, she managed over the last couple of years to become a millionaire. She got a net worth, according to sources, of $3.1 million. Now, again, I'm not hating on her. You know, I'm not hating on no black matter woman to get money out, to do things honestly, so-called, and stuff. But my whole problem with Negroes like that is that when they get to that plateau, they join right in with their white counterparts, whether it be Republican or Democrat, and help put laws in place to keep black folks from acquiring wealth. Because you know the racial wealth gap, Ellen Richie, you know how it's been. Is just, like Dr. Claude Anderson so correctly said, the racial wealth gap between blacks and white has not improved that much significantly since the end of the Civil War. But yet these Negroes get right in there with their white counterparts, Democrat or Republican, conservative or liberal, and help enact laws that make it hard for black people to acquire wealth, especially wealth building, you know what I mean, generational wealth. You know what I mean, Brother Allen Richard?
Yeah.
They make it so hard. See, that's my whole problem with them Negroes and stuff like that. But again, see, my whole thing, like I say time and time again, and I say these last two things, I promise Elliot and Richard, I'll be off. Like I say, I'm under no illusions. Like I say, you know, we don't have many Dave Richardsons. We don't have many Roxanne Jones. We don't have many Cynthia McKinney's, Adam Clayton Powell's that really cared about our people and stuff like that, really want to move our people forward. These Negroes today, they have pretty much the same feelings and disdain towards black folks, even though they're black like us in skin color, that the white folks have. And they don't give a damn about our people's wealth or health, wealth, or financial situation. Because like I said, if we think that Stacey Abrams or Kamala Harris or Clarence Thomas or Obama or this recent sister that just got, you know, confirmed by the court, the Supreme Court, and we think these people care about Joe Dennis or Elliot Richard or Brother Elliot or Brother Richard or Brother Jail, whomever, we delude ourselves. These people don't give a damn. They people live in large, whether they're Democrat or Republican, black or white for the most part. These people rich. If they ain't rich, they're going to be rich by the time they leave office. They're making millions of dollars living a good life while their people living in debt poverty. I mean, these niggas they ain't losing no sleep over us, and I'm not losing a damn sleep over them either. That's why we don't have enough sense to look out for ourselves as a people and try to acquire wealth the best we can and stuff. And we're waiting for them Negroes to help us. We've been waiting for a long, long time because them Negroes, they're just like their white counterparts. They live in large at the misery of their people, and they could kill all. They can hobnob with their white fellow politicians, male or female, Democrat or Republican, drink the high price wine and liquor and eat the high price food. They could give a damn whether you, me, or Richard exist. I'm under no illusions about these Negroes. Look at Obama. This Negro that made so much, he done made so many more millions since he left office. It's ridiculous and stuff. These people don't care nothing about us, man. But yeah, we get right up to the radio. Oh, Obama, the Supreme Court justice. Like, you know, we still into that cheerleading mode. Like I said, I've been got out of that cheerleading mode about the first black. The first black don't mean a damn thing to me. I've been out of that 30-something whatever years ago when Wilson Gay became the first black mayor in 83, and you seen what happened in his tenure. You know, whole black neighborhood got burnt down, and 12, 11 black folks died, including men, women, and children, who remains was definitely disrespected and treated in the most inhumane way. Their remains and stuff like that. And it's happened in his tenure that what happened on May the 30th, 85. So all this is first black mayor, first black president, first black banker, first black USA, Miss USA. That stuff don't mean nothing to me no more. It may mean something to other black folks, L.A. Richard. Don't mean nothing to me, brother. You can be the, because at the end of the day, if that black man or woman is not for their people and they're not conscious, all it is just black face on white power. That's all it is and stuff. So if you think it's going to be anything else, you're fooling yourself, man. So again, I'll get off because I know you got other callers, man. But I want to, you know, thank you for letting me express myself, man. But this Ukraine stuff, man, on terrestrial radio, I heard black folks just constantly calling up some of these people, and these people calling you the niggas and all that kind of stuff, and we got to stand you, Ukraine. And I applaud you, Ellie, when you on your shop and you get a chance to play that video that Brother Maurice sent you, man. Let them niggas hear that in that barber shop. So they so want to say we stand with Ukraine. They might stand with you, them white Ukrainians, but them white Ukrainians damn sure ain't going to stand with them. That's the damn sure. You know what I'm saying? So it is what it is. They ain't standing with you. You might stand with them, but they sure as ain't going to stand with you. Like I said, when these white Ukrainians come over to America and they become police officers, they're going to join right in with their white brethren and be shooting down black men and women just like their white brethren over here do now. Make no mistake about it. Make no mistake about it. Thanks, Brother Ellen Richard. Remember, Elliot.
Hey, listen, before you go, I wanted to get your feelings on this because I know that you are a sports fan. Now, let me read this to you. This came from a published report 2 days ago. Two more black coaches joined Brian Flores' discrimination lawsuit against the NFL. Two black coaches with significant NFL experience on Thursday joined the class action lawsuit that accuses the NFL and its teams of discrimination and paying lip service to hiring black coaches. The litigation of former Miami Dolphins head coach Brian Flores was joined by Steve Wilks, a former head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, and Ray Horton, who was most recently the defensive backs coach for a team now known as the Washington Commanders. Mm-hmm. Wilks was in charge of Arizona in 2018 when the team finished 3-13. Wilks was discriminated against by the Cardinals by being hired merely as a bridge and not given a meaningful chance to succeed, Flores' amended lawsuits contends. Arizona replaced Wilks with Cliff Kingsbury, a former head coach at Arizona Tech University who had no NFL experience. Kingsbury, mm-hmm. who is white, went 35-40 in six collegiate seasons, a sub-500 mark, despite the services of future Hall of Famer Patrick Mahomes at his school. The Cardinals mm-hmm. have become a playoff contender. Let me go down a little further. Horton was a defensive coordinator with the Tennessee Titans when he alleges was put through a sham interview for the head coaching job at Nashville to satisfy the NFL's Rooney requirement to interview minority candidates. Horton was at home in Phoenix when he was called on January 15th, 2016 and told to board a last-second late-night flight to Tennessee to meet with Amy Adams Strunk, the controlling owner of the Titans, to interview for the head coaching spot. the urgency of the request was so, Mr. Horton was told, due to the fact that Shrunk's granddaughter was competing in an equestrian event for which she had to go to Tampa, Florida for Saturday, the lawsuit says. Thus, Mr. Horton took a red-eye flight on little notice to interview for the Titans job. As Mr. Horton now understands, the rush to interview him was an orchestrated attempt to make it appear that the Titans had complied with the Rooney Rule and mm-hmm. otherwise appear to have given an equal opportunity to a black candidate so the team could announce a pre-made decision. A short time later, the Tennessee announced that Mike Mularkey, then Titans interim coach, had to secure the job permanently. Mularkey admitted that he knew the job was his before he was interviewed, and that mm-hmm. the minority mm-hmm. candidates interviewed was a part of the process of the sham interviews in order to comply with the Rooney Rule. So you see here, Joe, that two other coaches have joined the lawsuit. Now, it took, I think that lawsuit was started a couple of months ago.
That's correct.
Now, it took these two other brothers 2 months to stand up. And see, mm-hmm. that kind of lets our people know the system that they're living under, if some of our people don't understand. Now, you got all of those coaches that's in the NFL have faced this discrimination that Brian Flores has stood up and complained about. But the fear is, well, I'll lose my job. I won't be coaching in the NFL anymore. I'll have to do something else. If they weren't racist, why would you lose your job? Why would? What's the fear there? If these people are not racist, according to the guy that was here as a coach, Deuce Staley, if they're not racist, according to Staley, then what is the fear? Why don't you just join in with the man's suit? Put your name down as a support.
You know, Brother Elliot, you raised that. Because like I said, that's why I have so much respect for the late, great Johnny Sapple, Jim Brown, Cookie Gilchrist, because when them brothers took a stand back then, they had everything to lose. Because like I said, the NFL was making peanuts, and I mean pretty much peanuts, compared to what the guy's making now. And the thing is, many of the NFL players back during that time, they had to get a second job to make ends meet. And yet them brothers still stood up. And these niggas today, whether they coaches or players, making all this here money, and they can't stand up and be a damn man. I mean, you know, how much money do you have to get before you stand up and be a man and speak out against these racist bigots and stuff? And when you say about how the brother interview with the Titans in that sham interview, that's, again, just what Flores went through with the Denver Broncos. He said Elway was all drunk. Remember Elliot? He said Elway looked like he was hungover and stuff like that. I mean, these people, man, it's they laughable, man. I mean, they get these sham interviews, but they were damn well they Flores. Flores had just as much chance to get that Denver Broncos job as you and Richard had. And same with the brother with Tennessee. Me, you, and Richard had just as much chance to get that job as he did, which is slim and none. And Slim took the first flight out, which leaves none. I mean, these people are just a joke, man. They're a complete joke. And lastly, I say this, we can get off. I'm back on the police thing real quick, Ellie. You know, J.W.J. up in New York, and I'm sure he remembers Eleanor Bumpus and stuff now. In this woman's case, thanks to Allah, she didn't lose her life, but she very well could have. But with Eleanor Bumpus, 20-whatever years ago, here's a sister, I remember Bob Loss talks exclusively about it and stuff, man. Here's a woman that was an 80-something-year woman and stuff who was having a mental episode, and because she had a butter knife, not a butcher knife, mind you, Miss Bumpus had a butter knife, and these four white devil cops felt the need to gun her down. She had a damn butter knife in her hand. I mean, come on, man. You know, you see this stuff over and over again, the lack of humanity that these white cops show towards black men and black, and especially elderly ones, who could ever forget upstate New York, Mr. Kenneth, who was a doctor. He was a man, they always tell me, thank you for your service, Mr. Kenneth Chamberlain, up in upstate New York several years ago. Decorated United States Marine. Decorated, won all kinds of medals for value, bravery. But it didn't mean a damn thing to them white devil cops. It didn't mean nothing to him, his service to this country. He was having a mental episode, and they shot that man down like a dog. And guess how many years that them devils spent in jail, Elliot Richard? Take a guess.
What, none?
They say it was considered justifiable homicide. An 85-year-old man, you gun him down. So he having a mental
episode. I mean, listen, that's what Keith Ellison said, that those cops that shot Amir Locke, it's basically justifiable homicide. He said that they're not going to prosecute him.
Of course. And see, let me say this about Ellison. I'm probably not supposed to say about this nigga, I'm gone. Like I said, like, he shows, him and the Cory Bookers of the world, I have no respect for them. And I want nobody have to call up and say, oh, I think because of Farrakhan. I don't give a damn. They was talking about Joe Dennis or Elliot Booker. These two Negroes have no character. And I'm gonna deal with Booker first. Now, if Minister Farrakhan had said, I want to meet with Cory Booker, this and that, and Cory Booker dished him at the end, I would say, well, Minister Farrakhan, what you expect? You know, you deal with a Negro. But this Negro out of his own mouth when he was running against Biden in the election in 2020 said he want to meet with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. He want to sit down and meet with him and talk with him. Someone's doing white, no white racist Jews and Zionists got on his behind, white folks, period. He start capitulating. He came out and denounced the minister, trashed him, said he would never meet with Louis Farrakhan. Well, damn it, you the one that opened up your mouth, Booker. You the one that opened up your mouth for this stuff like that. That's why I have no respect for Kyle. See, I would have more respect for the man if he would just came out and trashed the minister from the beginning and said, look, I don't like, so I would have disagree with him. At least I could have said, well, he never was down with the minister anyway. And so when Negroes like that, they show a lack of integrity. I have no respect for him. And same with Keith Ellison. When he was a member of the Nation of Islam about 10, 12 years ago, he came here when Minister Farrakhan spoke here in Philadelphia. He's right at the hotel downtown in Philadelphia where the minister stayed. I never remember vividly. Keith Ellison, just before he became a big-time politician, he had dinner with the minister, broke bread with him and everything. As soon as he rose up in the political arena, oh, he denounced Minister Farrakhan. He denounced the Nation of Islam, everything. I mean, this is a despicable, spineless Negro. See, Negroes like Keith Ellison and Cory Booker, they are a disgrace, man. They're a disgrace on so many levels. The white man don't even respect them, but they use them Negroes because they're useful tools. See, Harriet Tubman, plain and simple, Ellen, she would have to deal with Negroes like that back then, man, because they're traitors. They got no respect, no integrity, no sense of pride or nothing. They're just Negroes, man. They are what they are, man. Simple as that. But anyway, Ellen Richard, thanks for your time, brother. Ellen Richard, put me on mute now. Listen to the rest of the show.
Thanks for your contribution.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Richard, he said how he really felt. Yeah. Oh, boy. Listen, time is winding down, Richard. I think we're going to have an interesting program Sunday.
Yeah. It seems to be building on what we're talking about now.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And I'm going to try to reach out also to the activists over there in the UK that sent me the communication about what they were trying to do and what was going on. And maybe they can share some of that information with the Time for Awakening audience.
Yep.
Before we leave tonight, I want to give the lineup. Well, not necessarily the lineup. We'll do that Sunday evening. Just tune in tomorrow. From 7 to 9, the Elders of Sankofa with Brother Alfonso Watkins. That's 7 to 9 tomorrow evening, 7 to 9 Eastern Standard Time. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so to take care of.
Right now they seem to play such a small part of the things that they'll soon be right at the heart of. My little Tommy, he said he wants to be a fireman. To save the children.